Harry Fetter, welcome to KABU.
Hi, Bill. Nice to be here.
Harry Fetter practiced law for about 10 years before realizing he would rather teach, in which he quickly became critical of high-stakes testing, which he realized forced teaching in schools to teach the test, which treats students as vessels to hold facts rather than be active learners, in which they take on meaningful projects and identify them and in their activity, they're themselves building their skills. That's as Harry and many of his colleagues did successfully in their teaching, and then developed the organization Fair Test, and Harry worked in it, and he became its director, as he remains today. For the last several years, Harry has been watching the development of the radical right's attack on public education, and he's just back from a conference of educational journalists who discussed, amongst many other subjects, the current radical right-wing attack on the public schools and their curriculums. So, Harry, analyze for us that right-wing attack, and then we can discuss what those committed to critical education, not indoctrination by the right wing, can do to blunt the attack and ultimately defeat the hard and often lunatic right.
Well, Bill, certainly for journalists, one of their, if not their, principal area of interest in their coverage these days is the what I would call the politicization of local education and things like curriculum and what teachers should be teaching, this whole sort of anti-woke mantra, anti-critical race theory, also backlash surrounding issues of gender and whether or not students should be engaged in, not just engaged in gender studies, but sort of free to express their own gender identity. And, you know, this is part of a larger movement, I would say, toward, and the idea of parental control towards privatization and really the undermining of public education. We see this through the voucher movement, which has gained new currency in state houses around the country. And these are not vouchers just to sort of try to do something different for public schools in inner cities that didn't work, as the original voucher programs in or Milwaukee, which were far from resounding successes. And the research on the impact of vouchers is pretty clearly negative. And for you listeners out there, I would recommend the work of Josh Cowan at Michigan State. But now it is the idea that people, parents should be able to decide where their kids go to school, and the government should sort of pay and subsidize those decisions, even when a parent is already sending their kid to private school and has made that decision. So there isn't really an equity element here. It's really just about choice. And when you have untrammeled free choice about what to do with your kid, what you don't have is any kind of recognition of the public mission of education to create a citizenry, a democratic citizenry that can engage in critical discussion, that can talk to one another when they disagree, that can learn about a variety of viewpoints, about a variety of things, that can be trained in sort of deeper thinking and learning and understand how to solve problems. And when you go into like the STEM fields, to actually think about what the next problem is, as opposed to just, you know, learning things in a rote fashion. So that's the kind of attack that we see. And it's sort of based in politics. It's based in electoral politics. It's a plea to the right wing base of the Republican Party right now. But beyond that, it's just another chapter in a longstanding attack on public education. And of course, you know, attack on teachers, who are in many ways the embodiment of public education, because they're the ones who are actually doing it. So, you know, we heard a lot from at this conference. There was a session on this where there was a principal, I think from Pasadena, California, who spoke of the challenges that he faced being sort of caught in between two constituencies, if you will, a sort of more right-wing constituency. And then there were parents who really wanted the school to be more open and more tolerant of different people's viewpoints, to actually have history taught in a way that teaches about the truth and interpretations of different historical events, whether they speak highly of America or whether they speak less than highly of America. So there's a lot of discussion there. And I think, you know, from the FAIR test perspective, I think that what we are advocating for is systems of education that are tolerant of people's differences, and also that gets kids to really think deeply and critically about facts as they are presented. And it is the job of school to sort of create these critical democratic thinkers and not to indoctrinate in any one particular worldview other than a worldview that recognizes difference and is tolerant of other people's viewpoints, but also gets kids the skills that they need to kind of argue about things as democratic citizens. And standardized testing is so far removed from that level of discourse that what it does is it creates schools as essentially, you know, kids wind up doing school as opposed to learning at school.
You know, Harry, one example I think that's so telling of many, many is the way the Florida in particular, but it's now being copied all over the country and by the red state legislatures. And it goes beyond that. We can talk about that, how it's affected teachers everywhere, teachers, principals, as the principal from California discussed in his conference presentation. One of them is the way they dealt with critical race theory. It sort of vilifies it as teaching hatred of whites, which is a complete fabrication. Critical race theory actually appreciates the contribution in much of the work of critical race theorists, many of them with somewhat different ideas, and they're working them out. But the critical race theorists almost entirely appreciate the contribution of white abolitionists, and in fact, all the whites who fought racism through the years, and then invite, in fact, the whites to join the anti-racist and pro-democracy movements, which I think is actually successful in the United States. The great uprising around George Floyd and the murder of so many black men and women testifies. People like DeSantis are very, very worried about a black-white. In fact, it's the history of the United States is replete with this, of trying to pit backs against whites and with blacks, of course, the reserve army of labor, often by poverty, forced to, in fact, break strikes by taking jobs so they can their families can eat for another year. And their attacks on LGBTI is so vicious and slanderous. Why is that radical right succeeding, though, in the schools?
Well, you know, you're in the process that they're succeeding. I mean, I think they've created a lot of tension and a lot of heat. But I think that, you know, what you find is, at, you know, there are a lot of places around the country where in school board meetings, you know, parents are like, you know, I just want my kids to learn math. I just want my kids to sort of know something about American history. I just want my kids to get the skills that they need to be able to succeed in college or in the workforce. So, you know, what are you doing here? You're kind of hijacking our meeting and our board and taking us in a direction that we don't necessarily want to go. And I would say that you're absolutely right about kind of race being a wedge that is used by currently the Republican Party You know, there was a time where the Democratic Party was the more racist party in America, in American politics, if you predate the 60s. And so what you're getting in this CRT business is, first of all, you know, there's a lot of untruths. I think if you like walked into your average classroom around America, they're not talking about quote unquote critical race theory. In their history classes, they may be talking about the slave experience. They may be talking about civil rights. They may be studying the idea that race is a critical element in American history and very much sort of explains a lot of American, the struggles over racial equality is a key element to American history, and that frequently the folks who were in power did not behave well or far from it, and that the struggles of Black people are very reflective of the struggles of all Americans who haven't been in positions of power. But I think it's you know, it's as they say, a false flag, even though it has politicized this stuff and basically it has people advocating for teaching untruths. And, you know, we don't want that. So I think that the bottom line here is that the politicization of this is an unfortunate element of current American politics, that where the national politics has been brought local. And I think the way to fight it is by right-thinking parents at school board meetings sort of standing up for education that is rooted in critical thinking and examination of truth and, you know, just sort of the what we know to be the best of public education. And so I'm not sure how to like answer your question. This is a problem, and I think the problem needs to be fought with advocacy at the local level and with folks who are in education for standing up to what they know to be a more robust defense of public education as we would like to see it.
You know, I agree with you about the strategy. Certainly we need a ground game, parents organized, and in fact very convincing. The left has developed convincing refutation of all of the slanderous, vicious statements. But my sense is that if you read the progressive press and watch things, it creates a sense that the progressive side is able to match the intensity of the attack and, in fact, refute it.
Well, you know, defense is harder than offense, Bill.
Yeah, it sure is.
So I think that, you know, the position has to be just lay off the schools, right? I mean, if parents actually like what their schools are doing, they have to defend their schools.
You know, it's interesting in the United States. This is also true, in fact, of politics as a whole. Parents love their...
You like your school, but you don't like education. You like your congressman. But
yeah,
you don't like
right.
Congressman.
Congress is broken. It doesn't work. But my guy, they're really pretty good.
Yeah.
My schools are pretty good. I like the teachers, but education is broken. Yeah, that should be.
But look, school boards are really like the kind of the first layer of democracy in America, right? It's like the most hyper local of all things, right? It's that and your like town council and stuff like that. So, you know, what's unfortunate, and you know what the right has perhaps done successfully, is kind of nationalize the politics at the local level. And I think the way to combat that is to, you know, for people at the local level to say, you know, we're just not playing this game. We just want to make sure that our schools preserve the kind of, you know, liberal free thinking and academic rigor and social emotional learning for our kids. And, you know, also teach them good values of tolerance and how to be good people. So the bottom line is, from the FAIR test perspective, you know, we think that an education that is rooted in kind of learning by doing and kids really engaging with material and questioning and having discussion and having inquiry-based learning. And when they're doing a math problem, to think about what the hard non-routine problem would, how they could apply their knowledge from other things in science to do experiments, stuff like that, for them to engage in music and art and all the things that stimulate the mind, and not to be burdened excessively by standardized tests and standardized curriculum. That would also increase teacher professionalism. And I think that if you have a generation that are trained in this way, they will know to sort of pick apart and question the falsehoods that are being perpetuated by some on the right.
You know, Harry, I think you're absolutely right that, you know, authentic evaluation is what you're promoting, what Therapist promotes. It requires schools that have authentic modes of learning where kids work on projects. And in fact, they build facts by doing and thinking about projects and examining and studying them and the problems that they face. And then doing reports and become able to both read about it and articulate it. That's an education. Assembling facts is just a apprenticeship for parlor games like Trivial Pursuits. Can you imagine that people engage in Trivial Pursuits? At any event, I can't. I know a lot of our listeners probably have been hooked into it, though. So, Harry, one last thing before we sign off today. Tell us about your organization, Therapist, and how to learn about Therapist and maybe contact you.
So Therapist, National Center for Fair and Open Testing, has been around since 1985. It was one of the loudest opponents to No Child Left Behind when No Child Left Behind was proposed and passed. It has been fighting against the misuse and excessive use of standardized tests, and continues to do so. Our website is www.fairtest.org. We've got a lot of campaigns, public education campaigns. We are the repository of the list of schools that are test optional and test free for college admissions. We're working on trying to promote and help develop systems of performance-based assessments, which we think are both promote better kind of education in terms of what we would broadly call excellence, and also in terms of equity. We're, of course, a not-for-profit, and you know, live by the grace of contributions from listeners like you. So we have lots of donate buttons on our website, and I encourage you to help us out, because all of this good advocacy type work does require a certain amount of resources. Although we are a lean, mean fighting machine, I will say. We tend to get interviewed and quoted in lots of articles that talk about testing. And so we have a voice, but we need that voice amplified.
Harry, thanks a lot for talking to us.
Anytime, Bill.
Keep up the good work.